I'm Matt Godbolt.
And I'm Ben Rady.
And this is To's Compliment, a programming podcast. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Matt.
What's new?
Well, I'm sick.
Oh, yeah. You've been
absent
from work the last few days with a head cold, right? Not the dreaded lurgy.
Yeah, no. I have. It's funny actually, because yesterday I woke up early because I couldn't sleep because I was all my brain was full of snot, and I came down and I sat down at my desk here in my house and started working, and like 14 hours later I was like, I should go to bed.
Oh my gosh. That.
And it was only because I was just super absorbed in work and kind of trying to distract myself from the fact
in
that
a good
I was
sick. Way, I hope.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's like it's one of those things where I really have to be cognizant of not getting too absorbed in what I'm doing, because I know that I will burn myself out if I do that every day. But yesterday it was actually kind of like good therapy. And I sort of like was thinking about, some of the folks at Twitter that are doing that not of their own free will these days.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And, going like, I have to be careful because I don't want to.
Talking of being careful now, you and I usually go out of our way not to mention anything that's particularly contemporary because we like to reorder our episodes as we see fit. And now we're exposed to having to release this one sooner rather than later. Otherwise people will. Well, that's assuming that by the time you're listening to this, Twitter even still exists.
Yeah.
I do hope
it does.
It survived a lot over the years.
That's true. We are not. That is not the topic for today.
That is not today's topic.
That has occurred will not be a surprise to our listener.
I would like to point out that I'm excited for you that you are as excited about what you're doing for your day job right now, that you can spend 14 hours straight and then ask the self-limit, because you will otherwise burn yourself out in a good way because you choose to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's great news.
It's been fun. The day job these days has been quite good. But anyway, that's not what we're talking
about.
That's
not what we're talking about today. No. In fact, we, as always, have our carefully chosen 20 seconds before clicking record topic, which is a surprising, difficult issue that came up in my little open source project. And I was surprised how difficult adding a particular feature was. And I was thinking to myself, this could be like one of those coding interview questions that you could give to somebody. And then I don't really like those at the best of days, but sometimes you have to come up with them. And then I thought, well, let's talk about it on a podcast because it's kind of an interesting problem. So the problem is this. Let's suppose, hypothetically, you have a website, and because you have very strong opinions about the amount of advertising or otherwise on your website, you want to strictly limit the number of little icons for your advertisers stroke sponsors to some number. So I only want to show, say, 3 icons at the top right-hand corner of my website, because any more than that, and it drives me mad, and I'm sure it drives my users mad. So that's the starting point. Then I suppose you've got multiple sponsors, and you have agreements with those sponsors that say, hey, I need to show your icon at least 1 in every N page loads. And, those so far, you have 3 sponsors and 3 slots. And so the algorithm has been hard code the 3 icons into the top of the page and get on with your life. So that's a pretty good algorithm so far. But then imagine a 4th sponsor comes along and you realize suddenly you have to make a runtime determination about which sponsors to show when, so that you can hand on heart go to each sponsor and say, hey, your icon is being showed this many times. And I have metrics to track that so I can actually show people this, right? And because the easy route would just be to randomly show them and then hope the law of large numbers comes along your side and just make sure manually that there is no, it's not impossible for you to show the requisite number of sponsors per time, that that's not fun. I'd like to come up with an algorithm which can provably show that I can get every single sponsor shown and that there will be no issue. Or it will throw an exception and say, nope, you've oversold everything. You can't keep everybody happy now. And you might have to go to four icons. So that was the problem I was facing. And I sat down and I wrote something and it turned out to be substantially more difficult than I thought it should be.
So just to clarify here, this is the promise that you've made to your sponsors.
That's correct.
Is that you will show their little icon, their image, some percentage of the page loads?
That's correct, yeah.
So just sort of like thinking of this at first pass, like, and you sort of alluded to this, like, it is possible that for more sponsors than three, you've actually overcommitted, right?
If, for example, I said to each sponsor 100% and I had four sponsors and three slots, it's trivially, well, I can't satisfy that, right? There's no sequence of shifting them around that makes it fair to all my sponsors because they'll all be less than 100%.
Right.
But if I have four and each one is 30% of the time, then obviously it's pretty trivial to just keep cycling them around and, you know, shifting them along. You know, show 1, 2, 3, 2, 3, 4, 3, 4, 1, 4, 1, 2, blah. There you are. They all get shown a lot more than 1 in 3, and that's great. Mm-hmm. So that's a good solution. And as a human, you'd sit down and work that out. Mm-hmm. As a computer, you could reasonably, you know, imagine you came up with an algorithm and all it has to do is say, satisfy the constraints that I've agreed. A solution to that problem where you have four sponsors and 1 in 3 is to have sponsors 1 and 2 and then show 3 and 4 on alternate page loads in the third slot. Right? That also, you know, the first two sponsors are getting 100% coverage. The other two are getting 50% coverage. So that's also a solution. Then that was when I wrote the algorithm, finally got an algorithm which didn't immediately blow up. That's what it did. It found, I said, like, this is perfect. And I realized I was missing a constraint.
Yeah, you want to balance them.
Exactly. So you also want to say, for a given frequency, folks who are being shown 1 in 3 should be shown around about the same amount. And that's what makes it even more difficult, because you've gone from something which is trivially provable. I was thinking about this in terms of, you know, complexity theory. Forgetting how complicated the algorithm that generates the solution is, and say, let's say the solution is an array of n samples of sponsors, right? So let's say there's just 10 of them, and they're each of those 10 array has a choice, three sponsors at a time. And I could say that to you, say, like, if you were to just cycle through these one iteratively, then it would meet my commitments, right? That would be like a something you could say. You can, in a very straightforward way, you can see if it is a solution, right? So it's the solution is can be checked in polynomial time if we're thinking about like NP and non-NP kind of problems, right? Like, so a solution where you're saying, is this, does this meet the criteria of all of the sponsors individually? You go, well, there's 10 slots. Sponsor 1 is shown 4 times. Sponsor 2 is shown 4 times. And sponsor 3 is shown 4 times. Whatever, then that's more than a third of the time. So they're all fine. Okay, this is definitely a correct solution. And so that becomes one category of difficulty. As soon as you say, I want to minimize the amount of difference between the numbers of times a sponsor is shown, it goes into a new category, because to check that answer, you have to solve the problem yourself. I could give you something which like meets the criteria of like it's definitely 1 in 3 or more than 1 in 3, but to prove that it's minimal is also NP hard or NP difficult or NP whatever the categories are. So it turned out to be more interesting than I thought. And there are definitely online algorithms for doing this kind of thing. But what I wanted to do, and this is the critical thing, and this is we're going to get it into one of your favorite subjects, is I wanted to write tests.
And yeah, I was just going to say, anytime you're dealing with sort of randomness, that becomes tricky, right?
Exactly right. And so when I was explaining this to a friend down the pub the other night, as you do, his solution was immediately like a dynamic programming algorithm, which just uses essentially an error metric of like, how often have I shown each one? And then each time you get to choose. So every time the page loads up, it effectively re-chooses another sample. And that's kind of how I solved it as well. That's what my solution is like that. But rather than doing a choice every time and or having randomness and or dealing with, you know, well, there are lots of servers. Each one of the servers has its own idea about which solution is what. I wanted to be able to write tests. So I wanted to be able to say, generate me a minimal set, and then I can compare it against what a human would have chosen for a rotation like that would work and satisfy all those constraints. Now, obviously, like I said at the beginning, if you just did a random thing, you could definitely say, well, just pick them with 1/3 probability, you know, scale the probabilities and then just keep picking them and see. And then you would get an answer. I'm quite sure you'd get an answer. But you would never be able to write a test that wasn't anything other than seed the random number generator with a known good seed, run the test for 100 and kind of go, well, empirically, I meet the criteria after 100 iterations, so that's probably fine. And I don't like that because it doesn't, I can't tell if the algorithm is wrong or right or anything. It just seems that.
Right. Also, those kinds of tests are super hard to read. But yeah, so let me make sure that I understand what you're trying to get at here. So you want to build an algorithm that's going to produce basically a script, a list of the configurations that are going to be shown.
Correct.
And maybe, I don't know, just to have the page just rotate through that list over and over again. Okay, cool. And then your tests then, are you expecting a stable output from the execution of that algorithm? So your test could be like, yeah, solve this problem for these constraints, and then it will produce that script. And then like in the most basic case, you could literally just assert that, you know, for this configuration with these constraints, it produces this result. And if I change the configuration, I will get a different result.
That is exactly
a fair summary.
Exactly correct. Yes. And so for the very simple cases, yes, you can sort of squint and say, well, what would I do as a human? And then obviously modulo ordering that where it doesn't matter. And in fact, I enforce a sort ordering within the icons just to make it sort of stable, like you said. That's what most of my tests are. They're like, well, I've got 5 sponsors and 3 slots, and then these two have this frequency, these 3 two have this frequency, this one has to be shown every time, and then this is the only solution that I could think of, and maybe it comes up with a slightly different solution, and then I just convince myself the solution is equivalent, and then say, okay, well, that's the one I'm codifying here. It's like my algorithm. So it's a little bit black box testy or not, the other thing, the other type. it's definitely a little bit oversensitive to the nuances of the algorithm in that, but it is at least human understandable, right? You can say, this looks reasonable to me, like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 4, 1, 2, 3. There you go. All right, now we've got all the ratios are right. Everyone's about equal. That looks good to me. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, and you could send that to all of your sponsors and be like, this is literally what we did.
Exactly.
Right.
If they
can.
And
from that standpoint,
I should like the record to note that my sponsors have shown no indication that they give any kind of care at all about this, other than like I have an agreement that says 1 in n, and I'm sure they'll take my word for it, but I would like them to know that I've really thought hard about it to make sure I'm giving everyone a fair shot. But so it was an interesting problem, and I sent out a message in this sort of random channel at work, and I'm afraid to say we paralyzed half of our math PhDs.
Oh yeah, it was a wonderful nerd snack.
When they all started citing N choose K papers and the choice problem and all this kind of stuff. But it was fun to discover. And as I say, it might make for an interesting interview question, even if you know how to do it, which I think I do now. There's still a lot to discuss in terms of like testability, like we've just been doing here. I should say that I did also write, as well as all these little unit tests, I did actually write an actual test that says, just generate, call the code that's going to use the pre-canned list, created the pre-canned list, and do it, you know, sample it 1,000 times, and let's just make sure that on aggregate it still actually does keep to all of those criteria that are, like, each sponsor is 1 and n. So that's kind of my integration test there, where not only is I'm sort of rendering the page effectively and then looking at the icons and going, like, did these come out right? Which tests both does the icon thing do the right thing? As well as, does it correctly call the underlying algorithm and then does it in fact choose a new and different one of the possible solutions each time round? Yeah. You know, like round robin or whatever it's doing.
You know, it strikes me that that actually might be a good application of a generative testing or property-based testing.
Oh, that's interesting. Framework. Yeah.
If you, especially if you wanted to be able to sort of dial up or down the amount of time you were willing to spend verifying the algorithm.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're never going to be able to get 100% certainty with a generative test, but you can be like, I ran this for 12 hours testing all possible combinations that the generative testing framework could come up with, and all of them satisfied the constraints.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not 100% sure that this is correct, but I'm like many, many nines sure
that's,
that this is
that's
correct.
Really valid. I mean, obviously, this is overkill. All this stuff's overkill because given the
of course.
N will be 3-page slots and maybe 4, maybe 5 sponsors total ever. A perfectly valid solution to this entire problem is Godbolt sits down and writes out the list and then types it into the code, right? Hard codes the list in. That's completely reasonable. But it was a really fun exercise in determining, you know, solving a problem that is actually quite computer science-y. But
I was going to say about the
generative, the thing that strikes me about the generative is that it is easy to, given a, you know, a generated set of constraints, like N slots, M sponsors with this many, like, constraints themselves, to prove that the result that you got out of the algorithm is correct. Right. That, I think, is what you're talking about here, is like sort of essentially randomly choose the number of slots, randomly choose a bunch of sponsors, call the algorithm, and then you can, using this simple algorithm of like just counting the number of occurrences and dividing them by how many times, how many things you got back, you can say, yeah, this definitely hit the constraints that we cared about. Although, again, the balance between sponsors is a bit more subtle in terms of that, right? But ignoring that part for now, you can say, okay, this is proven correct. What you can't do is check that if it turns around and says there's no solution, you can't tell if it's right or not. So if it picks, you know, 4 slots and then 10 sponsors that have to be shown 1 in 7 or whatever,
right,
something weird like that, you're like, I don't know trivially if that's solvable or not without writing the algorithm myself again, which defeats the point. So you could, again, but it certainly allows you to approach the conclusion that it'll either blow up incorrectly and tell you that something doesn't fit that you think could fit, but if it does give you a solution, it is a valid solution. So that is probably okay, because again, if you're on the phone to the sponsor and you're saying, okay, 1 in 2 or 3 in 7, okay, 3 in 7, we can do 3 in 7, and then I just type the thing, hit enter, and gonna go, oh yeah, it can find a solution for you. Yes, we're good.
yeah. No, I mean, you could definitely have a generative test that, like, if I was writing something like that, I would first start writing it with constraints that I knew couldn't be solved for, and then I would run the generative test until it blew up, having hit one of those constraints, just to make sure I'd written the generative test properly.
Right, that's true.
And then dial back the constraints until I sort of fit, like, the very edges of what I thought could be solved. And then let it run for a wrong time and figure out if we agree, basically.
Right.
And then see, like, okay, yeah. And then, you know, if it blows up and says, oh, I couldn't come up with a solution for this, then you sort of look at that and go, like, oh, yeah, no, you're right. There is, I can't come up with a solution for that either. Does that mean there's not one? No, but between, you know, the algorithm, the tests, and me, we can't come up with one. So, but yeah, that's super interesting. So, I mean, I got to say, though, like, are you going to leave our listener hanging by not explaining what your solution was? Because I feel like...
I mean, we've got code. So it's effectively the dynamic programming solution. So I have my array of sponsors to fill. And the first thing I do is I sort all of the sponsors by how their current occurrence compares to their hoped occurrence, right? So you start out and nobody's been seen ever, right? So everyone's equally badly placed, right? So at that point, you just pick 3 arbitrarily out of your list and you put them in. But now they're all at 100%, right? Which is obviously higher than the target that they wanted, and that's fine. Higher is always better, right? So then on the next iteration, you say, okay, who all else needs to be fitted in? And then you sort them still, and you say, well, okay, well, those three are now at the bottom of the list, and maybe the other sponsor gets to the top of the list now, because that sponsor is out by 100% or out by 30%, 33%, and the others are now like at potentially 50% because they would have been shown half the time. So, okay, he's more out than they are, so we need to pick him first. Okay, cool. And then you just pick any of the other two again, right? Now you've got those two in. And now you update the counts again and say, okay, now we've got a better idea when we're sort of asymptotically approaching the right numbers for them all. But the other thing that I do, and this is the second constraint, so that will immediately find a solution to the problem of having four where they have to be shown one in three. That will immediately find the solution where it goes 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 4, we're done. And you're like, no, that's not fair on 3 and 4. They get shown half as often as 1 and 2, even though they're all paying the same amount of money, right? Which is effectively what this all amounts to. So adding that constraint of like saying, I want to reduce the standard deviation of occurrences for sponsors that are at the same tier. So if you're a 1 in 3 guy, then I'm going to get all of the other sponsors that are 1 in 3, and I will say, how many occurrences are there of each of those? What is the standard deviation of those counts? If they're all the same, the standard deviation is 0. It means like everyone's got perfectly fair. But if it's like 2 and 0 and 0, the standard deviation is, huge. I don't know, 2 probably, nearer 2. And so that's too high. And so we're going to keep going. And then that also gets counted in like their score as to whether or not they should be picked or not. It's like how behind they are their contemporaries. And so you just keep going until you hit a set where all of your constraints appear to be, all your constraints in terms of the number of times that things are being shown have been met, and there isn't a single standard deviation amongst all of the sponsors at the same level where anyone's been put out by more than whatever threshold you've decided is like, that's fine. I think my threshold's set to a quarter or something like that. So like everyone has to be pretty much on the same number, maybe one higher than the other.
Right.
And that means that the algorithm will keep going. In the case of, like a rounding error of like, well, it's 0.333333. It'll keep going and adding more and more and more and more until eventually it goes, well, they're close enough now. They're within a quarter of a standard deviation over the number of choices that I'm going to make. Now, I can see you looking and thinking now.
Well, so the first thing I'm kind of thinking about here is, so you're actually able in this algorithm to bucket the sponsors into the like fixed frequencies, right? Like you have,
it's not a continuum because I've phrased it as one in n rather than 33% or whatever. Now I'm sure I could come up with an equivalent scoring that sort of says how fair is this. Now one thing that occurred to me is that the algorithm could in fact pick a sponsor that's paying less money to more often than the sponsor who pays more money if there's like competition at one level. So you could imagine weird situations like that. And I haven't put that constraint in yet, but my instinct is that you could come up with a score that you want to either maximize or minimize, depending on which way you do, about like how good this particular choice is. And then you keep going until either that score is as high as it could be, or as low as like it's an error, as low as you want, or maybe you go until it stops changing between iterations and you go, well, this is the best I got. And then if it's not getting any better, you're like, well, then no solution exists, which is kind of where I ended up. Although I just got a hard coded set of like, if you get to 100 and you can't fit these constraints, then probably that's not good enough. And so I'm certain, and maybe somebody who's listening now is jumping up and down in their chair or is walking their dog, shouting into the void about like, well, of course you use, Brezhnev's blah, blah, blah algorithm.
Right.
But, and if so, please let me know or send me a PR or whatever. It's one of those things that I enjoyed the intellectual challenge of trying to think of a solution, and probably somebody smarter than me is going to say, oh, there's just a closed form solution. But as I say, a bunch of math PhDs couldn't come up with an answer in an afternoon at work.
Right. And I mean, it's in a lot of ways, I mean, this is kind of like a portfolio optimization problem.
That's right? The funny thing is, it is very similar to our day job.
Yeah. That's very interesting. I was
going to say, it's actually an interesting problem that presumably every online advertiser kind of has to solve as well. They're trying to maximize mm-hmm. their profit given X, Y, and Z constraints. Like Google can't show you 100 ads. It can show you 3 mm-hmm. or 4, or debatably how many of the actual results are in fact ads in hiding as such. Right. But whatever, the idea being is like I show you the 3 best, and how do you determine those 3 best, especially quickly?
Right. And then there's the meta portfolio optimization problem where Google has to decide how many slots for advertisers will make us the most money. Right.
Oh, gosh.
So you got to optimize that portfolio problem based on the greater constraints of like...
how many will users tolerate? Yeah, exactly. Whereas, you know, I just plucked 3 out of thin air and thought, well, this looks like it's there's enough space on the page for 3.
Right.
Hopefully.
Did I tell you about the change to... have we ever talked about Bank of Dad?
We've talked about Bank of Dad. I don't know if we talked about it on air, but we've talked about Bank of Dad.
No, I don't think we have talked about it.
Which,
on air.
You know, is a great way of bankrupting yourself, as you're about to explain.
I mean, you know, for a greater cause. So for our listener, Bank of Dad is this thing that I actually got from a coworker many, many years ago, where his dad would pay him a ridiculous monthly interest rate for money that was quote-unquote deposited in the Bank of Dad, like 5% a month, so long as he calculated the interest properly. And this is, you know, it was like 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, right? And so I've done this with our kids for a long time. And what happens, what I've discovered, is that you got to make the problem harder and harder and harder. Otherwise, you're really not getting a good return on your Bank of Dad interest payments. And these days, for my oldest... we have given them a portfolio optimization problem.
Oh, my word.
Because we went from, you know, simple monthly compounding interest to daily compounding interest to continuous compounding interest to continuous compounding interest. We actually had a version of this where it was like, I would give them the interest amount for the month, assuming continuous compounding, and they had to figure out the interest rate.
So
inverting the problem. Yep. And now the latest version of this has been a portfolio optimization problem where I say something along the lines of like, okay, you can pick the interest rate and the number of days that interest is applied, but there's a fee calculation that is a function of those things. And so the fees will be deducted from your total interest. And so you have to figure out which combination of interest rate and days results in the highest actual payment to you.
Oh my gosh.
And this has been, and of course I now have, I've set myself up now for the future of having like infinitely many dimensions to add to this portfolio optimization problem where I say, okay, and here's another fee, and here's another fee, and here's another fee, and here's another fee.
So by the time they graduate from Bank of Dad, they'll be running their own trading system against the world, right? Or like having to solve the same problems that we do.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I mean, we've already kind of busted out a little bit of Python to try to solve some of these things.
Oh, gosh.
So it's leading in a good dimension. But yeah, both my kids are at least one of them is well-versed with this type of problem. And the other one is sort of like looking over the ones
you're going, how I'm going to... And you're going to have to come up with something more complicated.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Factorize large prime number correctly. You know, other people make their kids like mow the lawn and clear snow, rake leaves. In my household, I torture my children to do their music practices, right? That's how they get their allowance. But for you, they have to calculate portfolio optimization in order to get, I guess this is interest on their deposit of the allowance that they had.
Yeah.
So gosh.
Yes. We did have to put a cap on the total amount of money that it's in Bank of Dad. Cause I started projecting out and I'm like, we're not going to be able to make the mortgage payments if I keep
it's like
continuing on this pattern.
Like Donald Knuth, who stopped giving out payments. Yeah. He was doubling the reward for every bug you found, wasn't he, for a long time, and then went, you know, now we're up to $1,024. It's no joke if someone finds a typo. And so I believe he gives out like checks that are like not cashable, like they're fake, like Donald Knuth mm-hmm. checks. I had a friend at Google who had one and proudly had it on his desk, but you know, it wasn't actual real money, and for good reason. Mm-hmm. Really, I mean, that was maybe a mistake on Knuth's part, but whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, my friend.
But yeah.
Well,
those kinds of problems are all over the place is sort of my point.
Right.
And they are very interesting when you find them.
Yeah, they are. There are more places than you might imagine. And most of the time, of course, when people, like, we interview people and it's like we talk about potentially like problems that involve like what big O notation does this particular algorithm have? And then, you know, most of the time the problem is, why is this not compiling? Hang on a second. Have you got your environment set up right? Oh, wait a second.
Yeah, right.
Just put another space between these two things over here, please, and all that.
Yes.
And it's never actually a problem that's algorithmic in nature. But every now and then, you hit one, and you're very pleased.
Totally. Cool.
All right, my friend. Well, thank you for listening to my problem. And
this is a great episode.
If folks have any better ideas, then you know, let us know. And I'll see you the next time.
Yep. Bye.
You've been listening to Two's Compliment, a programming podcast by Ben Rainey and Matt Godbolt. Find the show transcripts and notes at www.twoscompliment.org. Contact us on Mastodon. We are at twoscompliment@hackyderm.io. Our theme music is by Inverse Phase. Find out more at inversephase.com.